Welcome to the after party. It's time to change. You're just getting started. You can teach an old dog new ways, and not just on Saturdays.
Hey, you guys, it's Anna David here with After Party Pod. The podcast all about addiction recovery, mental health, all that falls in between. I'm doing something super fancy, which is I just moved across the room with these two mics. And I did that because I wanted to get over to my email because I wanted to share the most amazing email that I received from one of you. Getting to that in a moment. Hey, how are you? What do I have to say? Well, it's a Tuesday and it's dark out already because that's what daylight savings time does at 5:47. I don't know about you, but I used to get so depressed by daylight savings time to the point that that day, you know, which was always kind of the day after Halloween, was pretty much the worst day of the year. And it would take me like really the entire daylight savings time to get over how depressing it was to get back to spring ahead. And I don't know, it has not been that bad this year. Could be a delayed reaction. It's been a couple weeks. I'm looking outside and it's dark, but it doesn't seem horrible. So I don't know, feedback, thoughts, you guys experiencing that? Something else that's not going to be relevant by the time that you hear this, it's my sober anniversary, as they say in New York, a birthday, as they say in LA, tomorrow, 14 years tomorrow. And I've been saying, by the way, that I have almost 14 years, I think, since November 20th last year. So that's cool. And, you know, another thing is, you know, you hear people say lots of things that are true and untrue. But one of the things that I started to hear right in the beginning of getting sober was, oh my God, it's my birthday. I'm freaking out. And I never really understood that. I mean, I get that alcoholics freak out about all sorts of things that aren't worth freaking out about. But I felt like it was one of those same things as when people talked a lot. I heard a lot in the beginning about people going, oh my God, my four step. I mean, oh my God, I'm going to go out before I do my four step. And I did my four step. And I think I've probably said this here before, but I'd been waiting my whole life for somebody to listen to a list of who I was pissed off at. It was the most amazing experience to get somebody to listen to that shit. So I did not relate to how horrible the four step was. And I really didn't relate to how horrible or freaky birthdays or anniversaries are. I mean, there's like, it's a wonderful celebration. I mean, it's a wonderful accomplishment. Anybody out there doing it. I don't really feel much of anything, which is, you know, probably something to examine. I used to always, compare myself to all the people that would get up and, you know, have a year and be weeping with gratitude. And, you know, and I was like, okay, I'm 10 years. I'm still not weeping with gratitude. So who knows? Maybe when I take cakes this coming week, I will weep with gratitude. Actually, the email that I'm about to tell you guys about pretty much did make me weep with gratitude. It is so beautiful. And I'm not sharing it because I'm trying to say I'm great. This podcast is great, but it was an email from a guy who basically talked about how, well, I'm just going to quote it. The second most important thing I did next to getting sober was subscribing to this podcast. And it just means, oh, sorry, I got a text. It just means, so what he wrote was just the most beautiful email I've ever gotten. And I, sorry, I got another text. You guys, I'm a little bit of a basket case. Holy shit, I'm so popular. I'm not. It's the same person who's writing me a long text. Anyway, that was really beautiful. I cannot tell you, because I get discouraged with this podcast. It gets sometimes difficult to get guests to agree to come on. I feel self-conscious doing these intros. And I get emails like that and it gives me the fuel. I mean, it just means so much. 'Cause anyway, I can't be as articulate as this guy was in his email, but if you are listening, you know who you are, and it means I am more than I can express. So, with that, I'd like to introduce this week's guest. He's cool. You're going to like this guy. His name is Ronnie Marmo and he is an actor. I mean, I would call him a soap star, though he would not call himself that. He had a part written for him on General Hospital, and he played it for 3 years, and the character's name is his name, so draw whatever conclusions you'd like from that. But he is primarily a stage actor and director and has a theater company called Theater 68, which is in Los Angeles and New York. And he directed and has been in the Bill W. and Dr. Bill play. Remember that? He played Bill. I mean, this so anyway, he's been sober a very long time, over 2 decades, more than half his life. And he has a crazy story. Jersey Boy, not in that musical, though he is in a musical right now. He has a one-man show right now. It's not a musical, but it's called Lenny Bruce is Back. Super talented guy. He his crazy story involves drug dealing, busts, crack smoking, insanity, and then coming to an AA picnic. Getting sober from there. So you got to listen to the episode to get how that all happens. So I hope you enjoy this week's episode. With that, I give you Ronnie Marmo.
I first started taking drugs by chewing blocks of hash.
Oh my God. I think my copy has like blood stains on it from shooting up while reading it.
Party animal. I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton. I was on the, as right. I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere.
I'm very lucky because would you have wanted to have a celebrity junkie for a dad?
We're totally recording.
We're recording.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't mean to make you super nervous. I'm sure that makes you super nervous.
Yeah, exactly.
So Ronnie, I'm so glad you came in to do this.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I love that you didn't even really know what you were getting into, but you just said yes.
I have no idea what's happening.
Right now.
But yeah, I just show up when people ask me.
Yeah.
Well, actually, when certain people ask me.
Well, because I dropped Mike Gaffney's name.
Yeah. But you were very nice. Your emails, I felt it. You know,
yeah.
You were very nice.
I know how to manipulate people into coming on the show. It's not a manipulation. I know how to make it sound good.
You did make it sound good. Your one-line emails were fantastic.
Right?
Yeah, I held on to every word. So
Gaffney told me, I've got this buddy who's sober a long time and he'd be great. So that was the intro to you. And now you tell me you guys share a mutual best friend.
Yeah, James DiBenedetto from New Jersey.
James, he might be a listener, you know.
Big Daddy James. If he's not, he will be starting today.
Yeah. Hey, James, welcome to the show.
He's great. So James and I, well, we're very dear, like best friends. Mike Gaffney and him, I think, are like best friends. We're grown men now, so it's hard to say this is my best friend, that's your best friend.
You still go by Ronnie, think you can, you're allowed to say.
Are you judging me right now?
No, I'm, I love the youthful, I love it when like, adults go by.
No, emotionally, I'm 15 years old. Really?
No, you're 20. You're 22 years sober.
24.
So technically, 24? You're 24 years.
Yeah, but I had a couple of weird years in recovery
like
as well. So yeah, there's like a little setback there a few times without drinking. You know.
So okay, so you are. Let's just go back to the beginning. So you're born in New Jersey.
I'm born in Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn, New York.
Yes.
Okay, and then family's like.
Crazy Italian family.
Yeah.
I was born an identical twin, and he passed away when we were little.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Which is crazy. And I only started talking about that the other day. I keep talking about this for some reason this week.
So it wasn't a thing that tormented you or you thought
well,
about?
To be honest, I have always kind of had this weird feeling, you know?
Yeah.
My mom told me when I was a kid, I used to, like, 8, 9 years old, I would go in the bathroom in the middle of the night and stare in the mirror and be like, I'm sorry. Like, I would talk to him. His name is Frankie. So I would talk to Frankie and, like, crazy. So I came from this Italian family, crazy. You know, if you didn't speak English or Italian, you thought we hated each other, but it was love, you know?
Right. What do you mean if you didn't speak English or Italian?
Like, if you spoke another language.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's like, I love you, you know, and I want to run your face into the wall. You know, it was that kind of love in my house.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of craziness. So so I grew up there and I lived in Brooklyn until I was 6. Went to New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. How many siblings?
I have one older brother and Jimmy. He's great. He's still in New Jersey. So I had so we moved to New Jersey because my parents thought it would be a better life, which is funny.
But Brooklyn's not easy, right?
No, it depends. I mean, you know, I guess it's all relative.
Yeah.
You know, New Jersey was like a farmland in my mind.
Right.
You know, if you had a big patch of grass, you had a beautiful lawn, you know.
Yeah.
Brooklyn, we didn't have much of that. So,
did you like Jersey?
I did. I mean, it became my home, but my grandparents still lived in Brooklyn. So we would go back all the time, every weekend. So I kind of claim both.
Mm-hmm.
If you make me claim one, I'll claim New Jersey because I spent from 6 to about 18 there. But Brooklyn is still, I'm still
cooler.
Well, it depends, you know. The Sopranos changed that, I think.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they love New Jersey. So I don't know. But I'm a Jersey boy. I mean, you know, yeah. What can I tell you?
So you grow up there. What part of Jersey?
Woodbridge, okay. Central New Jersey.
And crazy family. Crazy small. I thought you were going to say you had like six siblings.
Well, when you're Italian, everybody, you're related to everybody.
Right.
You know, it's my cousins, but you're not really cousins.
Yeah.
But my dad took off when I was about 11. And kind of, so my mom was this little Italian housewife that went from like, you know, no work to like working three jobs.
Right.
And I went from like ultra supervision, because my dad was pretty strict, to no supervision.
Right.
So like I ran the streets like a maniac at like age 11.
You There's know? Streets to run in? Oh, you mean like?
Yeah, like that, that's street lingo. I'm sorry, Anna, to.
So you were out there, like, what were you doing as a kid? What were you and your buddies doing?
We're misbehaving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were getting into drugs already?
See, the thing was, is the kids that I kind of looked up to were all 16, and I was like 12 at this time.
Right.
So all the kids who were 16 were like my idols. So they would like tell me, go steal this pack of gum from the store or something, and then we'll give you a beer or whatever, you know? And so I was like, oh my, all right, yeah. So those are my idols. So then when I took all the information I was learning from the 16-year-olds back to my friends that were 12, they were like, you're a genius.
Yeah.
So then suddenly I was the leader of the group, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's how it went quickly. And what can I tell you?
And no, so then you can tell me so much more. So
clearly. I don't even know why I'm saying that. What can I tell you? That's a stupid phrase.
Yes, all right. Hey.
I've never said it before. Today I said it twice already.
You don't know that you've never said it before. Think of how many millions of sentences we've all said.
I've said, what do you want from me? A lot. What do you want from me? But not what can I tell you?
You haven't said it to me yet, except just now. So, okay. So what was your first, when did you have your first drink and what was that like?
I don't remember my first drink perfectly, but I do remember I hated the taste. It was terrible. In fact, we used to have these train tracks in my old neighborhood and we would go and we'd drink there and we'd do crazy stuff. And I remember I would always walk like further away from the group pretending like I had to go to the bathroom, and I would pour out my booze because I hated the taste.
Wow.
And then one day some kid, I remember this perfectly, kid goes, what are you doing? He caught me, you know. I said, well, I had something in the bottle, you know, I quick was like, and he goes, well, you still have to drink it. Are you nuts? You know, whatever. So I drank it. I had to like show off, right? Mm-hmm. And that was it. Like, I got a buzz, and I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. So I just have to get through this taste
to have this
feeling.
What was it? Was it something like rum or something disgusting?
No. It was like a little Budweiser. It was like those, you remember those, we used to get those 24-packs little nip Budweisers? And so it was like just a beer.
You were just a pussy. You couldn't even drink a beer?
I wouldn't call me a pussy, and that's quite a statement, but
yeah,
I'm
guilty.
I didn't let you, I see the guilt. I don't know. I just didn't like the taste of alcohol the first time I tried it.
Yep.
I mean, I didn't know there would be a big judgment here, Anna, but that was my truth.
I'm just saying I liked it a lot.
Okay, from the first moment?
I think so, yeah. I mean, not hard liquor, but beer.
And you know what I loved? I loved vodka and Everclear.
Don't try to make it like you're not a pussy.
Listen, Anna.
Okay, so you like vodka and Everclear.
That's true.
I thought that
I used to light it on fire and take shots of
right.
Everclear.
Oh, wow.
You never did that.
No.
Okay, so let's just call it what it is. So you like beer, big deal.
Yeah, I know.
We'll get into my crack using later.
So surprising.
No, you don't even know.
Don't even worry. So you learn to like it. You're like 12?
Yeah. You
okay.
Know, between, it's a blur. From like 11 to like 17, I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
It all happened like, it feels like one night, one long night.
You know what I mean? Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I do. I do, actually. And so did you get in trouble? Or you don't know because it's all one long night?
I started getting in trouble around age 6, just in general.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was such a reckless kid that my mom used to have to walk me on a leash.
Shut up.
I swear, in Brooklyn, my mother tied me to the front stoop so I could play with my friends because I was out of my mind. I probably needed medication, but she wasn't, you know, interested in that. So,
but that's kind of horrible.
Well, today she would be in prison for sure, but, you know, my mom was cute. She's
little.
And, you know.
See, you thought it was like, well, I need this.
Well, in fact, most of my life, my mother would smack me in the back of the head when I was just sitting there doing nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I would be watching TV, and she'd crack me in the back of the head, and I said, well, what'd you do that for? She'd say, because I know I missed something. I know I missed something. You know what I mean?
Did your brother get that?
My brother was such a good boy.
Yeah.
In fact, when I would steal,
yeah,
he would make me take it back to the store.
Wow.
So I had a very different experience. So I was like really out of my mind from the minute I remember. So did I get in trouble? I was always in trouble.
Yeah.
Did drugs and alcohol get me in trouble? Sure, just a different kind of trouble, kind of.
So what was the first drug you did?
I guess I smoked some marijuana.
You smoked some marijuana.
Marijuana. That's the grown-up way to say it.
Yeah.
Weed.
So you smoked.
Yeah.
And you liked that right away?
Yeah, I kind of liked everything I tried right after booze. Booze was the thing that, like, I eventually fell in love with, but it wasn't the first thing that I loved. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It kind of became the thing I started doing every day because I was trying to, like, come down from, like, hard drugs. You know what I mean?
So
booze and weed was, like, the thing I thought I had to do in order to calm myself down.
And then, so how do you get out of Jersey?
Well, how did I get out of Jersey?
You went to college?
College.
Yeah.
I didn't even go to high school, Anna.
You didn't go to high school?
I left in eighth grade. I never even went to high school.
Fascinating. Okay.
So no, I did not go to college.
You did not go to college.
The college I went to was very different.
It's a college of life?
Well, yeah, it's usually, I'm not going to say I did any real time in a penitentiary, but that's what we call college.
What do you mean? I don't even get it.
They call it, in my neighborhood, college is jail.
Wow.
When they say I just got out of college, they mean they just got out of jail.
You're like, congratulations.
Yeah, congrats. You graduated. Saving, you got out. So I never went to high school. Can you believe that?
And so what did you do after eighth grade?
Well, I was really busy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I had a Corvette. I had bought a Corvette.
Wow.
I was let's just say I was dealing in pharmaceuticals.
Okay, well, don't skip the good part.
Anna, listen, it's all good. We could be here for all day,
okay,
like days.
How did you start doing that?
I met a guy, and the truth is I got left back in seventh grade, and I was so bored in school. Like, you know, I just had things to do. I really couldn't do it, okay? So I met some guy who gave me an opportunity to make a lot of money really quick.
Uh-huh.
So at, like, you know, 14 years old, I'm making $1,000 a day, and at 15, I have a Corvette.
So what does he say to you?
You know, would you like to make money? I'm looking for somebody in this neighborhood, really, to take care of business. And I was like, that's me.
What does he have you dealing?
Well, at first it was just weed. But then eventually, you know, they say don't ever, if you use coke, you shouldn't sell it because you become your best customer.
Well, isn't that don't get high on your own supply?
Well, yeah, that's a cool way to say it. But, you know, when you're 15, you don't know better.
You know
what I mean?
So he gives you coke to deal to your friends.
Well, just it turned out to be like nine towns I was supplying. At 15, I had a Corvette, which was parked around the block. And my mother, who died very young at 53, and I was 23, thank you. She passed away. But on her deathbed, she goes, and just so you know, I saw that Corvette. I'm not stupid.
Yeah.
So I didn't think she saw. I would hop the fence and get in the car. I would drive to school and this Corvette, and the teachers would go nuts. I was pretty much out of control, Anna.
And so was it... were you scared of getting busted when you were dealing
drugs? I never considered it.
Yeah.
In fact, I thought I'd be gone by the time I was 17.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be the kid that they write their name on the train tracks. Go, remember that guy? And here I am. I'm still
overdose?
Here.
Overdose?
Yeah, I thought I would die, like, in some dramatic way.
Yeah.
Whether overdose or, like, in some crazy fight or something, you know, because I fought a lot.
You did fight a lot?
Mm-hmm. So I have some scars that I can't really show you right now.
Really?
It would be inappropriate.
Right. You know? I mean, these are glass doors.
Well, that's the issue.
Yeah.
So
you got in fights, like knife fights? Is that
what
you mean?
Yeah, I mean, you know, different kinds of fights, sure. I mean, there were knives involved at times, you know.
Yeah.
So I was just reckless, and I really thought I wouldn't make it. So every day to me was like, you know, I really took that saying, live every day like your last, very literal. Like,
right.
I really thought I was just a cowboy, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I do. And plus, a lot of addicts do say that, you know? It's funny, I didn't have that, oh, I'm going to die young thing. I just never thought about the future.
Uh-huh.
It's different, but weird.
No, yeah.
Never thought, when I grow up, I'm good. I mean, I guess I did, but it was so vague. It was like, I'm going to be super, like, fabulous. And I sort of pictured myself in an office. It's weird because...
That's really funny.
But what's so weird is that until this actual office that we're in, I never had... I think, like, sometimes I'm like, oh, this is what I was imagining, doing stuff in an office.
This is your office?
Yeah, we're in my office.
Oh, this is really impressive. I'm serious. Congratulations, you got it.
Yeah, I got it. But I, so I pictured myself, first of all, I pictured myself in a suit, which is weird because I've never owned one, kind of being, kind of, I had no idea.
You're not
idea.
In a suit right now.
No, but this is a little dressed up for me.
No, I mean, you know, dress. It's like Saturday night, like at a club. This is like a club outfit, right?
Let's not confuse listeners. I don't wear club outfits to work.
Oh, you don't?
No, but I would say another way of saying that is I look nice.
That's
one way of saying it.
You do look nice.
So
the stripes are working.
So, okay, yeah. So slimming. Slimming. When stripes are this way. Anyway, you're wearing stripes too. But I had no, I do think that other kids were like, I'm going to go up, I'm going to get married, I'm going to do this, I'm going to be an astronaut, I'm going to be president or whatever. So you didn't do that either.
No, to give you an example of how what my mindset was, when I was a kid, show and tell in kindergarten,
yeah.
The kids would bring in what they wanted to bring in, and I would bring in like, you know, pictures of like John Gotti. Like, I wanted to, like, I thought, like, if I could just make the Gambino family.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, right. Really, that was, like, I always rooted for the bad guy in the movie. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I just so badly. But I was a nice, the thing was, is that it almost didn't work because I always had, like, a big heart and I was a nice boy. Every time I'd go in front of the judge, he would say,
you're a good kid.
What is the matter with you? Yeah. You're a nice kid. It's these stupid friends, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, to me, it was never, like, I wanted to, like, rob a pocketbook because I was a bad boy.
Yeah.
It was because, you know, I had an addiction and I had to take care of business. I would always feel bad if that means anything.
Yeah.
So I wasn't like cold hearted or anything. It was just my life. I was just in the middle of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So did you get busted for drugs? For dealing drugs?
Yes. In a very big way.
What does that mean?
They raided my house and they came in like off the roof. There was helicopters in my little neighborhood in Jersey. And my poor mom, I destroyed it. They ripped up the entire house. They took out her ceilings, her floorboards.
God.
They ripped up all her couches with knives. They destroyed her house. And I was tried as an adult. I was 16, maybe 16.
Why were you tried as an adult?
Because I had a handgun. I had lots of different things were happening.
Did somebody you sold to turn you in?
It turned out that, I don't know how it went down exactly, but it turned out that they had rented the house. The FBI rented the house across the street from me, and I didn't know it. And they had about 1,000 hours of me selling drugs. So, it was the best thing ever happened, you know, because honestly, like, I needed to get help terribly.
But did you get help then?
I did, but then I was sober for 2 years and 10 months, and then one morning I woke up and decided to drink a beer. And that night I was smoking crack again.
Did you go to jail?
I did for a short time, but I had a, I was very blessed, man. I had an angel always looking over me because I would get arrested for certain things, but I never kind of did any real time. And then I recall my lawyer's name was Lou Ippolito, this Italian guy from my neighborhood, and he took care of something. I don't know what happened, but all I know is that the day I asked for help, I went into court. I got busted with so many things. I had 11 accounts of assault. There was this kid who was messing around with my girlfriend. I went to his high school. Remember those little baseball bats you get at the baseball game, the little ones?
Yeah, yeah.
So I went into a high school with this bat, and I pulled him out of his classroom and beat him up. And
With the bat.
Yeah.
You
know.
Little bat.
It was little.
Yeah.
But turns out I got arrested for that. They caught me out in the field trying to run away. And so some big football player tackled me and held me down until the police came. Jerk.
God.
Anyway, he passed away since. So, whatever. I'm not going to get into that storyline. But anyway.
Yeah.
Because I have big feelings about that. But he did me a favor, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't know that then.
Yeah.
So I went to court over and over and over. And this guy, this old judge, was always like so mad at me. And the last time I was there, he's like, if you come in here again, I'm telling you, you're going away. That's a 4-year suspended sentence. So I went to court this one last time, and he was out sick, which was a miracle. Mm-hmm. And some young, beautiful judge, who was like 30 years old and beautiful, she's like, I'm thinking, I'm going to manipulate this woman, right?
Yeah.
So she looks at my stuff, and she realizes that, I don't know if she has the wrong stuff or whatever, but she says 1 year probation.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. So I start to walk out.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom's like, come on, you know, whatever. She was so happy. And so, because I had said goodbye to all my friends. I thought I was going away. And that's when I believe I had what I think is a spiritual awakening in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
Because something, I stopped and I turned to the judge. And I said, you don't understand. Like, if I leave, I'm probably going to kill myself. or someone else. Like, I was 98 pounds. Mm-hmm. 8 of it was my hair. It was the 80s. Mm-hmm. You understand? Mm-hmm. I was blow drying my hair at that time. Had crazy.
Can't eat, but you can blow dry your hair.
Right. I weighed. Yeah. And no one said to me, Ronnie, you should do something about this hair. Nobody mentioned it. You know?
Maybe there were other concerns that came first.
Well, but all my friends look like me. I look like a Q-tip, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it was 1987. So, but I had this awakening, and I turned to the judge and I said, I really think I need help. And is there anything you can do for me? And it was great. And we had this big moment. She came over and hugged me, which was nice. And I went home that weekend, and that was the last weekend. And then they found me a bed on Monday, and I went away for a 2-month rehab, which they
careful.
Oh my goodness, I'm knocking over. I'm getting all pumped up.
Don't get
here.
Too excited.
This table. Oh my God!
So you're trashing office. You're trashing my office the way the your house got trashed.
Anna, I'm getting hyper. What do you
I
want
know,
from
no,
me?
No, no,
you can't. You
know, it's good.
I haven't relived this in a long time.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's good.
Anyway, end of the story is they found me a bed in this rehab, and they but the judge was smart. She made me commit to 2 months, or I would go to jail. Mm-hmm. So that was really smart on her behalf. And because I said to her, you don't really, if you look closely, you don't have this right. I should go to jail right now.
And yeah.
I like totally told on myself.
Yeah.
And my mom was like, come on, you little son of a bitch. What are you doing? You know.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to curse? I just cursed.
Curse constantly.
Well, you called me a pussy before.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what happened.
And so where was this treatment center?
It was in Marlboro. Yeah, it's called the New Hope Foundation in Marlboro.
We've written about it on the website.
We called it No Hope when you were in it.
Yeah.
That's what the people in there would say.
Well, you know, there's a meeting in L.A. that's called New Hope, and people call it No Hope. Possibly they're copying you.
I went there more than once. I spent a few months there a few times.
Okay.
And I stayed sober until I was 20, and then I relapsed.
So you're sober, and you're living still at your mom's house?
No. Why are you saying it? Because I'm Italian? I'm supposed to live with my mother until I get married? That's very judgmental.
I'm just, you know, trying to get a picture.
You got to be. You looked at me. You probably lived with my mother.
No. So you have your own place.
No, you were right. So I lived with my mom, and then. But what happened was, Anna, is that at 18, I had a year sober, and I had gotten off probation, and I had this Corvette, and it got stolen conveniently. So I got a bunch of money for that. That was good timing, and so I looked at a map, and I saw that San Diego was the furthest I can go without going in the ocean. I'm not kidding. So I got on a plane by myself with a hefty bag of clothes because I didn't have a suitcase and a VCR, which is strange, but I got this great deal on a VCR just before I left, so I bought it.
Yeah.
I don't even have a TV, but I had the VCR, right? So I have a VCR and a hefty bag of clothes, and I fly to San Diego alone. And I go there for a week, and I called my mom. I said, I'm going to stay here, and I stayed 2 years by myself in San Diego. And I met a bunch of East Coast recovery. I had 13 months sober at the time. And after like a year and a half in San Diego, I drank again.
I have a couple questions. So you were getting your bad addiction at that point was cocaine that you were snorting?
At some point, like my nose like wasn't even working anymore, so I started smoking it.
Okay.
But really at that point, I was just into whatever I could get my hands on.
You know? Yeah.
Except heroin. I never kind of
You ever do it?
No, I never went down that road.
Yeah. So one day in San Diego, you're like, you know what, maybe drinking and is not the same thing? Like, what was the thought?
Well, here's the thing, right? Like, it's never just one day. It's like it was months of me going to meetings and thinking everybody was an idiot.
Yeah.
And
it was San Diego. Let's be honest. They might have been. I'm totally kidding.
That's very...
I love my San Diego.
Do you love San Diego?
No. My brother lived there for a while, and he absolutely hated it. So maybe I'm biased.
I loved it so much.
Okay.
Yeah, I would go there now if I could, like...
You could. It's only like an hour and a half away.
I really could. So I never considered it.
Yeah.
So what happened is that, you know, I was going to meetings and I was pretty much annoyed by everybody and I was judging everyone. And then one day I woke up and the desire to drink was more than stay sober, right?
Yeah.
So I thought I'm going to pick up a drink. So I was living with my buddy Jackie, who's out there. He was sober too. And I said, Jack, I'm going to pick up a drink today. And he said, no, you're not. I said, no, I am. Because I like to fool around. So he thought I was fooling around. So I bought a 6-pack of St. Pauli's Girl because that was really good beer, right? And I hadn't drank in almost three years. So I picked up a drink and I picked up another drink. And he literally was chasing me down the block while I was drinking. Mm-hmm. He was like chasing me, and I was like,
"Dude needs Al-Anon, but go on."
Yeah, but
he was trying to help.
Yeah, he was my friend.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
yeah.
still my friend, Jackie. He lives in San Diego still.
Nice.
So, and he likes it, by the way, Anna.
Well, you're probably jealous of him since you wish yeah. you were there right now.
That's true. So I drink, and literally, I'm in San Diego. I had never drank or got high in San Diego, and that night I was smoking crack.
Wow, how'd you find it? You find it.
What kind of question? Yeah. I can't give names, Anna. Yeah, you know yeah. what I mean? How did I find that?
You found it. And so did you immediately know this is bad? This is out of control? Or you were like, no, I'm going to be a totally controlled crack smoker.
No, I never pretended to even want to be.
Yeah.
Still today, I don't want to be.
Yeah.
If I ever drink again, I'm going to destroy everything.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even want to have a drink. You understand?
Yeah, no, I don't either.
No, I want to take people down. I want, like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I used to, my first year of sobriety, I had a job where I was like covering parties for a magazine, and I kept thinking, like, I'd watch these, you know, people bring like champagne glasses around, like, I want one. And then I'm like, no, I want 16. I want to call my dealer.
Yeah.
I want to end up, I guess, suicidal.
No, that's exactly what I want. In fact, I have no interest in a glass of wine.
Yeah.
It reminds me of church, actually. Wine scares me.
Yeah.
I never drank wine. It's like church.
To me, it's like, oh, I'd get a headache and just feel cranky.
Yeah, I can't drink because it's going to get really ugly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Do you have alcoholism in your family?
Oh, yeah. My dad was, clean and sober for a long time, but he was one of the original people they tried methadone on in this country.
Really?
Yeah, he was. My dad was really a brilliant man. He died just a couple of years back and young. Thank you. But he was. He was a heroin addict before I was born.
Yeah.
Did many years on Rikers Island in prison before I was born, and they tried methadone on him, and he came out and ended up getting his master's in social work, and he implemented the drug program with Nancy Reagan. Just Say No. My dad worked on that with her.
You're kidding?
Yeah. So at age 11, like he split. And I'd see him, you know, a couple times a year, and he'd make me put Just Say No on my friggin' wall.
Right.
And then I didn't see him.
Ineffective, in your case.
It's an understatement.
Was he like, you know, Ronnie, we got this genetic... Or they didn't really talk about the genetics.
No, my dad was an incredible man who helped millions of people, but we couldn't talk to each other.
Right.
So no, we never had that conversation.
Were you resentful that he left?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. In fact... He came to visit me in rehab and gave me a big book, and I basically told him where he could take that big book.
Yeah.
I threw it at him.
Yeah.
I said, you're the reason I'm here, so you should...
Were you able to sort of, you know, reconcile before you
died? Oh, yeah. The last, like, I'd say the last 6 or 7 years of his life, he was my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had that big conversation that I waited my whole life. You know, because when you're Italian-American, and, you know, your dad is like... Well, everyone feels that way, but... You don't disrespect. Like, I would never raise my voice to him or anything.
Right.
You know, until one night. I finally couldn't take it. So I told him, and it was great. And he, you know, yeah, it was perfect. He's amazing, and I love him. And so it's all good.
And so did he apologize?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a big, we had a conversation that left. We started in Palm Springs. And all the way to Hollywood, 2 hours in a car together. And let's just say I was driving like 120 miles an hour and punching the dashboard and the steering wheel a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of screaming in the car. And we didn't look at each other once the whole time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was a lot to be said.
Yeah.
And I love that guy. You know, he's incredible. I mean, look, I saw the magic in him, what everyone saw in him. I was just bummed that I didn't get to heaven every day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he was really a special guy. Funny and amazing. And like I said, he helped so many people.
And so how long sober was he when he died?
Well, he wasn't sober when he died. He picked up a little wine one night and kind of went back.
Wow.
After 20 years.
So...
His life was full circle.
Did you get sober after the smoking crack the same night that you had the drink?
No, I stayed out there for probably... I don't know. It's fuzzy to me. Less than a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like suddenly back to who I was, you know? And to the point where how I got sober again was Labor Day 1990. What happened was I was at home and all my... in this apartment complex in Pacific Beach, PB, mm-hmm. I don't know. And so I was in PB in San Diego, and all my sobriety brothers, there was like 10 of us, lived in this huge complex. So they would always come visit and go, hey, they called me Spike because it was this funny movie, Spike from Bensonhurst Out.
Yeah,
so they'd be like, hey, Spike, you ready to get sober? And I'm like, you know, you guys are a bunch of idiots. So I would drink and I kept going and I was alienating myself. Finally, one day, the night before I got sober, I remember I really was like, had it. I was going to end my life. And I had been drinking and for days, and vodka, lots of vodka. That's after I wasn't a pussy anymore.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know,
glad you grew up.
Eventually, I stopped being a pussy at age 11. And so, but anyway.
When it hits a nerve, it hits a nerve. I get it.
God, yeah, you hit a nerve there. But it's probably because you spot it, you got it, right? I'm like.
I'm a girl.
You
it's
are.
Allowed. No, it, that's not true.
Yeah, you just kind of just insulted a bunch of girls.
Yeah.
That's like the statement, throw like a girl. That's a terrible thing to say.
I can't throw. And you know what? You want to know something else?
What?
Can't really drive either.
You can't?
No, I drive well, but I sure get lost a lot, even with a GPS. And I'm just going to say this because I haven't already buried myself enough. When I lived in New York, I had the one cab driven by a woman was the worst drive I've ever had. She was the only female cab driver. It was she just didn't know anything.
Do you have girlfriends or not?
Yes.
You do?
I do. I mean,
not after this, but it's
insulting. Don't worry. They don't all listen. But no, I do. And I always have. It's not like just a sobriety thing. Like, I've always been cool with that. You know, I sometimes have fallings out, but that is...
But that happens.
That happens.
With friends,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mostly with girls, more than boys,
more
right?
More often, I would say.
Boys just kind of hug it out and get on and watch the ball game.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. We don't need as much.
Yeah, and you don't have as many feelings about it all.
I'm a sensitive guy, and I don't know if you picked that up.
I do get that.
Yeah.
And alcoholics, I would say, in general, are pretty sensitive people. So you, after a year-ish...
Anyway, yeah, somewhere in there, the night before, I literally was going to take my life. I called one of my best friends, and I asked him to talk to me on the phone, because I was really worried. And he said, I can't talk to you, but call my girlfriend, who I had never met.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent the whole night on the phone with his girlfriend for like 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the next morning, I woke up. And my apartment at the time had been locked, padlocked, because I didn't pay the rent. But I was inside.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? They didn't know I was inside.
Mm-hmm.
So I was stuck in my apartment.
So crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So my sponsor, so this guy Joey comes to the house, Joey, and he says, hey, you ready to get sober? I said, no, no. He leaves. He comes back with a quart of Yukon Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, he's like, I got you this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, you got me whiskey. And he was sober.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, that's so nice of you, Joe. He goes, yeah, yeah. I thought, you know, you should have a drink. So he's like, have a drink. So I drank this whole quart in like 20 minutes because he was egging me on.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up at a sobriety picnic, drunk, sitting in a circle with 1,000 people.
Oh,
and
my
God. I had no shirt on. And my sponsor goes, so you feel humbled now? You
know? Oh my God.
And I woke up at a Labor Day picnic.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I was
so they
trashed.
Waited until you passed out.
I was drunk. Like, I don't even remember. Out. I don't remember any of it. So then they took me to a 7-day rehab, and I never forget. I was trying to come to, and I saw Joey walking away with no shirt on, and then he was a big guy, and I looked down and I had his shirt on. And then I realized that and that was it. I haven't had a drink or a drug since, and that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So that was how I came back. But you know, it takes what it takes, right?
And then had you wanted to be an actor before you got sober?
You know, I was the kid who, like, literally I would go do these crazy things on the street corner with my friends, who are all dead, by the way. All my friends I grew up with are dead, and one's in prison until he's 63. That's the first time he's eligible for parole.
Yeah.
And they're all dead, four of them, murdered and OD'd.
Jesus.
So I'm the only one who made it. And so, but what I would do is I'd go home, and like, as a teenager, and like, you know, I'd go to bed, I'd be like writing poems, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like an artist, and I didn't know what that meant. I was just like a street kid, you know?
Poetry any good, you think?
Yeah, you should. Maybe someday I'll share it with you.
If you memorized it, you could recite it.
Well, I know some of them.
That's so cute. Maybe we'll get to that.
Okay, yeah, it's not happening today. Anyway, the point is that did I always want to be an actor? I don't know if I could put my finger on it then, but I knew that there was something beyond here. I always kind of thought, like I told you that, I thought I'd be dead by the time I was 17. At the same time, I always thought it was either that or something else was waiting for me beyond this.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what it was. You know, I thought I would either be underground or something else was happening.
Your
you
name
know?
Would be in lights. You didn't think
some that. Lights. Maybe the lights, yeah, right next to the freeway on the... So.
And so you began pursuing that then.
Well, my mother passed away when I was 23. And her and I used to go see plays all the time in my neighborhood. And the plays weren't very good, but I thought they were brilliant. You know, I was like, oh, my God. So I would always be, like, going crazy after the show. I was, like, 3-4 years sober.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom would say, like, you should try it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, no. And then when she died, I called my friend who just passed away, crazy enough, young guy. I called him, Pat Carpenter, because he was the one we used to go see in the plays. And I said, Pat, next time you hear about a tryout, I didn't even know it was called an audition. Mm-hmm. You hear about a tryout, I'd like to come try out, mm-hmm. you know? And he told me about it, and I went, and I got the part, and had no idea what I was doing. And that's what happened when I was 23, and so I've been pursuing it ever since. And I started making a living, so thankful, in, I guess I was like 27, 25 maybe,
mm-hmm.
and I've been doing it ever since.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you never waited tables.
I waited tables for 2 years at the beginning because I thought you were supposed to. I thought it was a requirement.
Yeah.
Like I quit my job. I was like, I'm going to wait tables.
What was your job before that?
Oh, I had a lot of different jobs. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Okay. Stupid jobs. I was a headhunter.
Oh, wow.
I got people jobs.
Yeah.
But really all I did was go to work and pick on my office mate the whole day and at the end of the day buy me a tie. It was the whole thing.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean?
It's hard to picture you in an office though.
Well, that
I mean,
was the
I'm
problem.
I'm seeing it right now, but you know.
No, I'm sitting in your office, yeah, but this can't go on much longer because I'm going crazy in this office. You know what I mean?
It's weird. I gotta be honest.
It's so not my thing.
I'm in a nightclub outfit and it's still.
No, you look like it's Saturday night, and meanwhile, it's Tuesday afternoon.
Okay, go on.
I can't believe I knocked your picture off the wall.
To be fair, it wasn't on very, like, it's.
It wasn't, and it's too close. Look, I go like this.
I know. I told you this whole setup is changing. I'm having an actual podcast table built. I'm not even kidding.
You're having a table built. You know, they have a lot of tables in the world. You could probably find something that suits your needs.
We've got this one, but
you got this right on Hollywood Boulevard.
No, I did, and I paid money for it.
You paid for this?
Yeah, I know. It's hard to believe. Not a lot. Not a lot.
It's cute. It's actually like where you're gonna eat your sandwich. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's cute. It's, you know, it's great on a podcast to talk about things that people can't see. Just so you know.
Well, they can't see us.
I know, but they can Google. They should be Googling you, first of all. Yeah. And possibly you're listening to this podcast because they know you.
Maybe.
And they're like, who's this woman who keeps talking? I want to hear my buddy.
I'm sure there'll be someone listening who knows you and not me.
Yeah, well, maybe the regular listeners.
Yeah.
Who knows? Good. Who that'd knows? You're a well-known guy.
Well, you know, a few people, three or four people.
So let's talk about you becoming a well-known guy. So you start, now, it was my impression that you were a soap star, and you did clarify when you walked in that that was not your thing necessarily.
No, I did General Hospital for 3 years.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Yeah.
But I kind of never saw myself like a soap actor. Although I have to say, it doesn't mean the same thing as it used to mean.
There's
amazing actors on soaps. And a lot of my scene partners were awesome. So, but I've been lucky enough to make a living doing film and a lot of theater. Theater's really my heart.
Yeah.
But you can't make a living in L.A. doing theater. So I did 150 episodes of General Hospital.
And did you not play a guy named Ronnie? Am I making that up?
I did. I played Ronnie.
Did they create that for you?
Yeah. The part was written for me by the head writer, and I thought I was only going to do 5 episodes.
Uh-huh.
So that's why I was shocked that, you know, every week they just kept calling. And so I did 150 episodes. And,
yeah.
And it was cool. And it was it made me a better actor, truthfully, because you get one take, and, you know, that's it. Like, they're banging out.
Yeah.
I mean, they shoot 120 pages a day.
That's insane.
And in a movie, you shoot that in 22 days, you know?
Yeah.
So,
that your first, you know, sort of foray into becoming sort of a well-known-ish guy?
Well, I did a movie. My biggest role, I think, was in a picture called Deuces Wild. It was a 50s gang movie.
Yeah.
It was an MGM film, and it was a lot of stars in it and me, which was funny. But there was, like, you know, Brad Renfro, who's passed away from addiction.
Yeah,
now.
I knew him.
So did I. He's a good friend. In fact, I was the only one who was, because he was underage at the time, and I was the only one who could take him off set, mm-hmm. and I would take him to meetings and stuff and try to help him. And,
he was a good kid.
He avoided me when he saw me because he didn't, you know, he didn't want the truth. I loved him. But there was a lot of great people. So I did that film, and I guess it's fair to say that General Hospital gave me the most amount of street cred,
mm-hmm.
because it reaches a lot more people.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly there were some circles of people who, like, appreciated the things I had done. I've probably been in about 40 films.
Your IMDb page was too long to print.
Oh, stop it. You're very nice. It's been great lately. I've been very blessed.
Really? Why? Yeah. So, and you did you directed the Dr. Bill, Bob.
Yeah.
Tell me about how that happened.
What's going on here? You're dropping your what? Is this like
trying to make you feel comfortable? So I'm trashing my office a little bit too.
Yeah. Thinking about this office, I have to be honest.
Yeah.
If we reworked a few things, there wouldn't be such danger with the left arm.
By the way, I'm so open to that.
Okay.
I'm so open to
that. Well, let's finish this, and then I'll see if we can move some furniture.
Yeah.
Um, So Bill W. Dr. Bob.
Yeah.
I got cast in the play in New Jersey like 19 years ago. I couldn't do it, but I kept the play always, and I always thought about it. And so then we had this little theater. I'm the artistic director. I don't know if you know of a theater company.
Yeah.
Theater 68.
Yes, I did know that.
In LA, New York.
Email signature.
Oh, it is?
And also, you know, I do my research.
You do?
Yeah.
You don't have to look that hard. It's not much going on. But Theater 68.
Yeah.
So I have this company 14 years old in LA, and yeah, in New York we're 3 years old. And I go back every 6 weeks
to
New York, whatever.
Yeah.
Thank you. So I love the company. I'm doing a great play right now. You should come see it. It's called Serial Killer Barbie.
Okay.
It's a big hit. The Times give us a rave. It's the
Where
first musical
it?
I ever directed. It's at our theater, the NoHo Arts Center.
The NoHo Arts Center.
Lancashire Magnolia.
You know, and NoHo is now the new arts place.
I did hear that. It's where it's happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we'll talk off the air about Serial Killer Barbie, but it's going awesome.
Are you in the plays that you direct as well?
Sometimes, but I usually don't direct myself because I'd like to think that my ego's not that big.
Yeah.
And I'm not that good. I need people to watch my performance.
Okay.
So I don't. You know, could I direct myself in Bill W? Yes, because the play, I've done it so many times. And
who'd you play?
I played Bill W.
That's awesome.
I played Bill Wilson. But I finally grew into the age because when I first directed it, I wasn't old enough. And now I am. And
you don't look old enough, though. Do they old you up a little bit?
Anna, she plays 39. How old do I look?
Well, no. I mean, I would say that my image, you know, Bill W., I would say there are more pictures of him.
Yeah, as he got older.
Yeah.
In the play, he's 39.
Yeah. And is that the same? So when
I old do I look, Anna? Please be honest. I need a haircut. We're gonna
the big hair is, does make you look younger. I think
it does.
I would say you look honestly like 34, 36. No, for some reason I didn't say 35.
What happened with 35?
I don't know.
You left it right out.
I don't know.
Okay, thanks for clarifying.
Yeah,
appreciate that.
Do you think that sober people look younger than other people?
Probably because they probably get a little more sleep, unless you're a head case like me. I haven't slept lately, so I probably look older than I usually do. I would say probably because I always think that anyone who has a program is like actually working on themselves and taking care of themselves. There's probably a bit of a relaxation in their face. At least I don't know. I don't know how to communicate it, but I would say I usually can tell when I look at somebody I don't know if they're sober, but there's some sort of like self-help. They're taking care of themselves in some way, you know?
Right, yeah. Well, and also not imbibing things that are bad for you helps. But I also have a theory that, I mean, it's different with drinkers because they do look older. But people who did drugs, this is not scientific, you know how they keep you from emotionally growing and they kind of keep you repeating the same things over and over again. I think they preserve your youth in this weird way, in mostly a terrible
way. This is a crazy theory.
It's a crazy theory. But you will notice that like former junkies and former coke addicts, when they're sober, they tend to look pretty young.
Mm. Well, it's probably because the way they were looking, anything's an upgrade.
True.
You could look at it that way.
But you meet them and they're like, I'm 50. And you're like, you look 36.
No, I hear what you're saying.
It's weird.
I hear what you're saying.
My friend in New York says that AA is God's beauty parlor.
That's what he said?
Yeah. What do you think of that?
I'm going to have to think about that one.
This is kind of good, though.
A lot of pretty people there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Did that keep you interested in the beginning?
Well, when I first came around, there was a bunch of old people.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I was one of the first young people in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I came, there was another guy named Joey who was my age, and I met him there. And so there was two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And back then we were going to like CBGBs in the city. And, you know, I know looking at me, you probably think I like disco, but I grew up listening to hardcore. And, you know, we'd go see the Ramones or Sick of It All, you know, great skinhead groups. And that's what I was into when I first got clean. And so he and I were the first two that were clean and young. And then suddenly another guy came in. And then we had this little group going, you know. So I didn't have – in New Jersey, it was very different. Out here in L.A., you go to – you could hit a few meetings, and certainly there's lots of glam going on.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like that where I was. I just didn't want to feel bad anymore. You know what I mean?
But so the ladies didn't keep you coming back?
The ladies usually, the average age was like 97
in my meeting.
So they kept me coming back because they made me cookies and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And they thought I was cute. They're like, ah, there's the kid, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that kept me coming back. Today, ladies, it's a little different mentally. I don't need cookies at this point.
Do you go to lots of men's meetings, though?
I don't really. And I don't even have an answer why. I don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe it's the cookies.
Maybe it's the cookies. You're very funny. Did you see the Bill W. play or you
No.
Didn't?
Oh, that was so when I kept hearing about that, that was your play.
That it's was not my like, play. I have the rights to it in L.A. So, yeah. So it's my
But what play. About the one in New York?
I wasn't affiliated with that, okay. Although I spoke to the writer a lot and I helped. But I didn't. My name wasn't on it in any way. But I certainly was a part of it. In fact, there was some talk at some point of me maybe going in and playing one of the roles. But I just couldn't leave here for so long to commit to that. You know. But so that was me, and I directed it, and we did over 400 performances.
I was very bummed I missed it.
Well, you might see it again because I haven't done it in 5 years. 5 years has gone by, if you can believe it. And I was just talking about it because I like working with sober people, but the truth is I don't get to do it enough. So in my mind, I'm working with 100 people a night when I put on that play.
Yeah.
Because when you come, it's really an experience.
Yeah.
Like crazy. So to me, it's like...
Makes but they're not sober people in the play.
Well, sometimes I do it. I try to find sober actors because it means more to them.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you find sober actors, they boss you around and tell you who Bill was, and that's hard to direct. So there's a fine line, you know. It's a fine line.
You mean those know-it-alls who know the history?
The AA police.
Yeah.
No, I love the history of it, actually, and I could probably learn more, you know, and the play. A lot of people would come to the play because the book is such old language, and sometimes... You know, it's hard sometimes to get through it for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for me to get through any book, really.
Yeah.
I'm not much of a reader in that way. But people would come and say, they'd see the play and they'd say, now it feels like the big book coming alive is like a pop-up book. And they'd say, now because of the play, I've stayed sober. I got hundreds of letters like that.
Yeah.
I couldn't stay sober before. I didn't understand it. Now it's very clear. So to me, that is like, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so.
Was it taped and is that available for people?
It was taped. It could be available, I guess. I hadn't really considered it. I used to struggle, to be honest with you. I struggled with the idea of selling tickets.
Mm-hmm. Right, because service.
Service in the traditions. That's a different. So, but I eventually let that go because I realized that in order to put it on, it takes this money to do it. But it took a while. Like I struggled with that because I don't want to ever make money off of anything that like that, you know?
But there is a massive difference between being of service to somebody that you're helping, you know, sponsoring or whatever, being of service to a meeting, and doing your work that happens to help people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's something that, frankly, I never even think about. I mean, I do. Obviously, it's sort of hitting a point for me. But, you know, with this website.
Well, sure.
I edit,
sure. You must have.
You know, and with the books that I wrote about it, I'm still doing it as work. And it's not, I'm not working for 12-step program in terms of just helping people. Anyway, shouldn't feel guilty.
I appreciate that, Anna. And if I ever do, I'm going to call you and go, I'm feeling guilty.
Yeah. I'll talk you through it.
Thank you. The thing is for me is like, you know, Bill Wilson said, I heard somewhere that never be too anonymous where you can help someone.
Yeah.
And at the same time, when they were like, being anonymous is our biggest factor, it was way before, no one could anticipate everything that's going on in the world now with the internet and the media and all that. So it's a funny balance, and I certainly don't want to be the guy to change what their wishes were. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, it's almost fashionable to be sober. You know, a lot of people are sober. It's amazing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, it's hard when you hear people are perfectly comfortable lamenting it who are not in it. So that's sort of what motivated me.
Well, one of Bill's fears was always like the wrong guy who gets on the, you know, on the news then drinks, and then they say, well, AA doesn't work.
Right. Well, yeah, but I think that's... We end up talking about this on the podcast pretty much every week, which is good. We get a new take on it. But I mean, that's ludicrous. You've got people going around saying it's the most evil cult in the world. So one guy... I mean, people are logical. Like, they one guy...
You're giving people a lot of credit, and sadly, I wish, but I've had too many conversations with people who just don't get it, and I'm like... And they say, you got a brainwash. Well, believe me, my brain needed to be washed. My brain was not, you know, my best thinking got me in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know, you know, it's shocking. It's shocking in this day and age that people aren't all familiar with the program, but there are people who still don't have any clue what's going on. And they have this big fat judgment about it, you know?
What do you think of the possibility that people who do not suffer from addiction and therefore don't need it cannot understand it?
What do I think about people who don't suffer and don't need it? I've never met a human being that doesn't need the program.
Really?
No. I think some sort of 12-step self-help program. My Aunt Fran is the nicest woman in the world.
Yeah.
The nicest woman in the world. She could probably use the 12-step program for something.
Right.
So I don't buy into the fact that in fact, if it was a requirement for everyone to have some sort of 12-step structure in their life, looking at their part and, you know, making amends when it's appropriate and all those things, I have a feeling that this would be a nicer world.
I completely agree.
So I don't buy into it. There's different levels of addiction because here's the truth. It's self-diagnosis, right? Mm-hmm. So you know, you may think I have a problem with knocking furniture over. I personally don't think I have that problem. I've seen it. It's an issue, but it's not a problem.
When it happens 17 times in an hour,
I know. Well,
something
listen,
to look at.
I'm like,
you
put me in the seat like I'm 6 years old. I feel like I'm waiting. I'm on a block. Like
Your back is to the wall, so you could get shot.
And, you know, the fact that I'm still listening to you is a testament. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, I do think that everyone could benefit, but I do think that the only people who are willing to do these radical, on the surface, unpleasant things are people who are in a great deal of pain, as opposed to minimal pain that they're not aware of.
I hear you. And you know what? I think you're probably right, but I will say that there have been people who I've met along the way who don't have, how do I express it? Don't have, like, they're not in so much pain where there's big, dramatic things happening in their life, but sometimes the slow cookers, the slow burners are even worse.
Yeah.
They, you know, I know people who are 50 years old who have yet to have a real conversation with somebody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and they're going to blink, it's going to be over, and they're going to go, too many regrets. So I feel like it comes in all shapes and sizes. Does that make sense?
100%.
Okay.
I completely agree with you. I think that low-grade pain is all over.
All over.
You know.
I'm the kind of guy that when something was wrong, people in Cleveland knew about it.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
I have a feeling you might be similar.
I mean, I just sort of feel like I feel things very deeply, you know.
I can tell.
Still today.
No, you're still resenting me with the picture. I feel it.
No, things like that I get over. But I just, everything is feels, you know. And I think that's alcoholism in a certain way. Like, I can't handle how I feel. I have to change it.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
I do know what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So your life today is, you're 24. Sorry, I can't do math.
24
years sober.
Mm-hmm.
You've been sober more than half your life.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your life like today? You live in LA.
I live in LA.
Go to New York every 6 weeks.
Every 6 weeks I go to New York to take care of my theater company in New mm-hmm. York. I'm a complete workaholic.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to that club.
Yeah, people say, what do you do for fun? I say, I work. That's my hobby.
Yeah.
I produce a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I produce a lot of films, mm-hmm. kind of, but I produce a lot of theater. My life is basically trying to, you know, the thing is when you do this for a living, there's not a 9-to-5 job where you go like, I'm only as good as the last job or the next paycheck, and I'm only worth whatever people are willing to give me. So financially, I mean, not worth personally, but financially. So I'm just always chasing the next job.
Yeah.
Every time I leave a job, I say I'm going into retirement.
And then
I come out
Something
of retirement.
Happens. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm out of retirement. So I've been very lucky lately. I've been working a lot, thank God.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I go to as many meetings as I can. I try to keep my head on straight. And mm-hmm. I do a one-man show where I play Lenny Bruce.
Okay, yeah. And that's going on right now?
Well, it was. I did someone else's play for a few years, but I finally have written my own with Lenny's material mm-hmm. From the blessing of his daughter, Kitty Bruce, who's amazing. And Lenny died of a heroin overdose at 40. And, you know, he's incredible. And so so I do a one-man show where I play Lenny, and I'm trying to nurture that a bit. And you know, I just have a lot of things going on, and hopefully I make time for everybody and everything, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I try to, you know, take care of that. So.
Seems like a pretty good life, if not a very good life.
I think I have a great life, because the truth is like, you know, I could be in prison or dead. I mean, the difference between me and my friend who's in prison was I just ran a little faster. I mean, that was it, you know?
Yeah.
And so why did I get saved and he didn't, you know? So I really take literal the idea that that, you know, every day is my last. I really do. I'm getting the most out of this life in a crazy way.
Yeah.
I try to be gentle along the way. I try to be the best friend I can be. And, you know, not bang into too much furniture, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, maybe tomorrow will be a better day for that.
Well, I'm off to a bad start right now.
Can only go up. This is a great note to end on. I'm good. You got anything to add?
I don't have anything new to add.
Good. You love that guy, right? He's lovable. Ronnie Marmo, go check him out all over the internet, the web, as we say. And thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.